This is the Athletic Football Show.
The Athletic Football Show is presented by State Farm. Because like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Get a quote today.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. Today is Friday, February 4th. I'm Robert Mays. Fun show for you guys today. Obviously, on Fridays, we typically do a preview of that weekend's games. We are not doing a Pro Bowl preview. We decided to bypass the Pro Bowl preview. Instead, we're going to do something I like to do every single year. I always think it's a fun exercise to look at the teams that made the conference championship games, the teams that made the Final Four, and try to figure out what lessons we can learn from them. Whether it's team building, strategy, just kind of take whatever got those teams to that moment and see if we can apply them to some broader concepts, themes that we might be able to take into this offseason, into next season. To do that, I wanted to welcome two of my favorite football people, one of whom you listen to every Friday on this show, in Nate Tice, and the other in ESPN's Bo Barnwell. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much for doing this. It's very fun to have you both on the same show.
The unholy trinity. I feel like Poochie, Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie show. That's where I feel I'm squeezing in onto this show. I'm so happy that Bill's on with us. This is so exciting.
I was told this was going to be a U.S. men's national team podcast because Nate and I podcasted about football last week. So we hit our quota. So I'm a little confused as to what we're doing here today, Mace.
If we're bringing it all the way around, when I met Nate for the first time, when Nate reached out to me on Twitter for the first time, which was probably, I don't know, 8, 9 years ago at this point, right?
Yep. Yeah,
it was when he was listening to the Grantland NFL podcast and we were talking about his dad. Is the first time I ever talked to Nate. So it's all coming full circle here. It's coming all the way around.
I was correcting the what number pencil he used, I believe. You made a joke that you were a number 2 pencil. And I was like, it's a number 3 pencil that he uses.
Well, because the story was I was in Vegas with some friends and I was at the Mandalay Bay. I think it was for... I don't remember what it was. I mean, at that point, I was in Vegas like every 2 months because I was living in LA and I was very young and I spent way too much money. But he was at Mandalay Bay and your dad was playing the ponies, as he's wont to do.
Sure.
And he was there for at least 8 hours.
Yep.
And he had a number 2 pencil in his ear. I was making a joke about it on the show and you reached out and corrected me. It was like, it's a number 3 pencil. You were conspicuously quiet about the number of hours he had spent at the sports book, though.
I know he has his. He used to have his little roped off area, even though it wouldn't be.
It
busy
was.
At that
it was roped
book.
Off.
Yeah, some random time watching horse racing. And it's like not even the good tracks. It's like Aqueduct. And
wow.
I know. Sorry if anyone from Aqueduct listens or anything like that. Tampa Bay Downs. He wasn't even been like Churchill and Del Mar, or Belmont, or any of those. So. Yeah, that's like you said, he's wont to do that. That's his hobby when he's outside football is a little bit of horse racing in his life.
Can I ask a question that maybe you guys, everyone knows the answer to and I'm just stupid about? How many numbers of pencils are there?
It's a great question. I didn't know there was a number 3 pencil before this thing came into my life.
Is there a number 1?
I didn't
1?
Either. There might be. I think it's like the lead thickness or something like that.
But
it's
how
like
many are there?
I don't know. I don't know what the max is.
I have a very strange friend that still uses number 2 pencils to this day. It is his writing instrument of choice. We'll go to a fantasy football draft and he'll have every single player printed out on sheets of paper as like in his rankings and he'll be writing on it with a number 2 pencil. So, Os, this is for you if you're listening. Good job, buddy. All right.
Your pencil usage got to mention. You made fun of me when we first started podcasting because I would write with like a little pad in front of me. You're like, you're just an old man. I get names wrong and I write on a pad of paper. So that's my old man usage right now.
Well, we got three old men here that are going to toss around some ideas about the Final Four teams that we just watched in the conference championship games. We're going to kind of go one by one and just list them off. Really curious what you guys landed on. Barnwell, you're a guest here. I would like you to go first. I'm giving you the floor. I'm ceding you the stage. What is your first lesson that you want us to take away from the Final Four teams?
How do you want to handle it? I mean, do you want to go lesson by lesson or team by team? Because I'm a little confused.
I was going to go lesson by lesson. But we can.
Okay. I'll do it that way. That's fine.
Okay.
Lesson number 1. And you, Mace, you will like this lesson. Nate, you will like this lesson. And it's a lesson that is right up your guys' alleys. Wow. Teams should spend a lot of money on offensive line and defensive line coaches. Because look at some of these teams. and look at what they're getting out of players where they would be in trouble if they did not have these caliber of coaches. And I'm actually going with the two losers here in the Niners and the Chiefs. I mean, the Niners defense on paper should not be good. Like, yes, you have Nick Bosa, you have Fred Warner, you have two superstars. No issues there. Arik Armstead is a good player. Was better when they moved him inside as the year went on. But like Chris Kocurek has done such a good job of developing the players along that line and getting the most out of players who were kind of also ranked elsewhere, like an Arden Key, for example, a guy who, you know, was really lost in the shuffle in Oakland and Las Vegas. Yeah, he was with Oakland before they moved. But just, you know, like guys who looked good maybe coming out of college, maybe had like they had some traits that might profile as interesting at the NFL level and hadn't consistently delivered. And then I think on the flip side, you go to Andy Heck with Kansas City and the work they did this offseason in terms of improving their interior line. And this paying for Joe Thuney is going to make a huge difference, but Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith. I mean, I was literally watching the Nate Tice stream of Chiefs Bengals right before we hopped on. And Nate just talking about how outside of the one snap Creed Humphrey rolled to Patrick Mahomes, like how good that interior offensive line was at run blocking and how they should have run the ball more in that game. Maybe they'd be in the Super Bowl if they had run more. So I think just, you know, that is such a difference maker because it allows you to get so much talent or also to take players who might not be all that useful on other teams who aren't going to make all that much money and have them be regular contributors for your football team.
It's you mentioning that it's been on my mind a lot recently just because we have this coaching carousel that's currently happening. Mm-hmm. And down here in Mobile, we were talking about it the other night. Just those guys are worth their weight in gold, especially offensive line coaches. And you look at what the Browns did with Bill Callahan when Kevin Stefanski got there. Not a lot of connections, right? I mean, it's not as if Callahan is a Shanahan Kubiak guy where it fits necessarily the system that they wanted to run. But they looked at having Bill Callahan as a rare opportunity. And he is the highest paid position coach in the NFL. They were willing to do that. I think it is a true inefficiency to look at that position and just say, there's no salary cap on coaches. It doesn't matter how much we pay this guy. Let's find rock stars in this area, no matter where we are in our trajectory, because it's going to make a difference.
We talk coordinators and where they go, and that's what's so – it's always so interesting, not only what head coaches get hired, but then what assistants go with them. Like, mm-hmm. All right,
yeah.
Who wants to work with this guy? Who wants to work with this guy? They let this guy out of a contract? And one of the most interesting ones is Mike Munchak with the Broncos. He's not getting retained, or he's leaving. I don't know how amicable, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's interesting. It's like he's like at the top free agent. And like of mm-hmm. all senses, players, coaches, it's like someone's going to back up a Brinks truck to hire him because he's, like you said, worth his weight in gold. I wish O-line coaches got paid their weight in gold because of how much my dad weighed.
wow, got him.
But it's proportional. You know, it's proportionate with how it works. But sorry, Dad. But also just you brought up multiple times throughout this year, Robert, is the 49ers defensive line coach. And like you said, Bill, with Arden Key, and just no matter who gets plugged into there with the 49ers, it's a mindset.
Charles Amenihu.
Yeah.
And just this philosophical, you can see a mindset and it comes from the coach. Like it's just instilled on them day after day after day and how aggressive these guys play. And that's a great point, Bill, because I completely agree. It's these guys, it's they get so much time with it, especially as practice time gets limited, as much as we're going to talk about that and how much cohesiveness a good offensive line needs and a good defensive line, just with the games that all these defenses are running now, it only gets more complicated. That it just is what it is. And as we have less practice time, that coaching becomes more important, you know, minute by minute. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great, great, great lesson to learn.
One of the coaches. Oh, go ahead, Barra.
Can I also throw in like a 1B there that I think comes to mind with me for, I guess for a couple of these coaches, not Andy Reid, not Sean McVay, obviously, and maybe not Kyle Shanahan, just because Kyle Shanahan had that big contract. But I think there's a conversation to be had about being more patient with your coaching staffs. I mean, would anybody have batted an eye if the Bengals had fired Zach Taylor after last season? And you know, with Kyle Shanahan, yes, like because he had that big contract, because he had his reputation, he held on to his job, but he was bad his first couple of years. They were 10-22 his first two seasons. Like, I don't think he was about to get fired, but you know, I think there is this rush, and it's so easy for us to say, hey, you know, change the coach. They don't know what they're doing. They're limited. They suck. They're this and that. And like, Zach Taylor might be winning a Super Bowl. And I don't think literally any single person on the planet outside of maybe Zach Taylor, I'm not even sure about Zach Taylor, thought that was going to happen heading into the 2021 season. So I feel like that's important just to keep in mind, is that you don't want to get too high or too low on certain coaches.
What if so, they run three QB sneaks in a row when they're backed up? Bill, you can answer that one.
Oh boy. I think Joe Judge should have got a third season. I was happy they let him go. I feel like it was the right move. I feel like he was sort of losing his mind towards the end of this season there.
Yeah.
But if the Giants had gone 10-7 next year with Joe Judge, that wouldn't shock me. That wouldn't have been crazy. Like it would have taken some changes and they would have had to maybe make a move on offense. But I feel like that would not have gone, that have been the most unimaginable thing in the world. That's happened with the Bengals. They went 10-7 this year and then got hot in the postseason. So I feel like, we can find embarrassing or bad decisions or bad clips for every coach on the planet.
Yes.
And I think it's just important to keep the big picture in mind.
Absolutely.
So I'll do mine next because I think it's an extension of what you said, Barnwell. And, and one of my lessons from these teams is it's a simple one and it seems obvious, but affecting the quarterback with four guys is still king. Like, especially when you get into the playoffs and especially as we get to a world where quarterback play is at such a high level that if you're bringing extra bodies and you're making it easier on them in any way, look at the quarterbacks who are playing in the divisional round in the conference championship games and look at their numbers against the blitz. Matthew Stafford led the NFL in EPA against the blitz by far. Mm-hmm. Mahomes, teams don't even do it anymore. They just don't do it anymore.
They don't even rush four. They don't even rush four against Mahomes anymore. They only rush three.
Yeah.
So teams don't even blitz Mahomes anymore. Joe Burrow destroyed teams when they brought extra guys and teams stopped doing it. So now that we live in a world where blitzing is the downside of it against some of these quarterbacks is so high, you need to be able to affect the game with four pass rushers. And if you look at the four teams who played last weekend, all four of them were in the top 11 in the NFL in defensive line spending in 2021. All four. The Bengals were 11th. The other three teams were within the top 10. The Chiefs were number one, which isn't surprising when you think about the way they've constructed that roster. The Niners, Nick Bosa is still on a rookie deal, and they're still really high on that list. So I think that's important. And then also, not even beyond the resource allocation, all the Niners, Bengals, and Chiefs were all in the bottom 10 in blitz rate over the second half of the season. You think of the Chiefs as this big pressure team, which in previous eras and in previous iterations of a Steve Spagnuolo defense, they were. But one of the reasons that their defense was better in the second half is because they didn't have to do that. When they moved Chris Jones back inside and they signed Melvin Ingram, it allowed all the pieces to kind of fit together. Even the Rams, who were middle of the pack in blitz rate this year, they're only bringing five on 23% of their opponent dropbacks in the second half of the year. And one of the only reasons they do that is to create one-on-one matchups. They're not a blitz-heavy team. They're not bringing a lot of six-man pressures. So if you can affect the game with four guys and just use, because the playoffs especially are so game plan heavy, think about what the Bengals just did. You need as many bodies allocated in as many different hard to predict ways on the back end as you possibly can. And that requires you to get home with four guys. Nate, what do you think about that?
No, and it's great because my point is kind of dovetailing off of this. One of the points I wanted to bring up with this final four, and really actually the Bills are kind of being included in this point I'm about to make, but really just being, you ever own like a reversible belt and black and brown on one side and might not be the nicest thing, but it's very handy to have. Like, it's like black, brown, boom, done. One belt, got them both down. Don't have to worry about the shoes, all that. Well, that's like the Bengals defense. And it's just that it's adjustable. It's not sexy, but being adjustable, like going game plan heavy, like you just talked about, Robert. And Bill, when I was on your show last week, this kind of like, it's really got my wheels turned. You're like, is it hard to change what your defense is week to week? That was more or less what the question you had. And I started thinking a lot about with the Bengals defense because they have so many vets that they're able to kind of go, oh, I remember that from a different place. I can run it here now. But I think just being adjustable, being able to adjust, not just during the season, but during the game matters so much with this defense and being solid and not having any true weaknesses. I feel like the Bengals and the Bills defense had a lot of parallels in how they were run this year. More just solid across the board. Bills were kind of like a souped up version of that, of course, mm-hmm. you know, especially with the safeties they had and the defense alignment they had, but just more making it hard on these quarterbacks and adjusting what you want to run week to week to week. If we're only going to rush four and we're only going to run 3 to 5 blitzes a game, and we're really mm-hmm. going to dial those down, okay, they have to time up well, and we have to adjust when we run them. We have to adjust what we give against this opponent. The interception that Mahomes threw on the RPO was a great example. The Bengals did not show that simulated pressure before that play. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden in the middle of the game, they just plop it right in there on a first and 10 or second and short call out of nowhere. And really that's what it is. It's being able to adjust and adapt to what the offense is trying to play against you. And I think that's really become an importance with all these defense. I don't think having good players, yes, of course, that's not like a huge takeaway, but even mm-hmm. more just having average to above average, not having those true weaknesses on your defenses where an offense can't just attack and pick on a guy and mm-hmm. squeeze and play sound. And I think a lot of 78 to 82 on Madden overall ratings, you know, on the Bengals and Bills defenses, but just be able to adjust and be solid. I think that's really a lesson I've learned is the Rams are a different version. They're stars and scrubs, mm-hmm. but that's why I like looking at these other defenses where it's like, well, they have no Pro Bowlers. Like, how is this a good defense? Then you watch it's soundness, be able to adjust and just be able to adapt to whatever the offenses are playing mm-hmm. against them. So really, game plan, season adjustments.
mm-hmm. It's so funny that you say that because one of mine, I sat and looked at that Bengals defense and was trying to figure out, okay, what is the lesson that I want to learn from this? And the thing I came away from is just that you can weaponize free agency specifically on defense and specifically in the secondary because you're going to find those 78 to 82 players in Madden. Yep. And it's hard to do. And I know Barnwell's going to get mad as I continue to say this, and he's going to tell me that I'm wrong. But if you look at the way they built the secondary specifically with guys mm-hmm. like Von Bell, with guys like Chidobe Awuzie, like you said, Nate, it's just about flexibility and about not having any true weak points. Mm-hmm. And you bring up the Bills are a good comparison. Micah mm-hmm. Hyde and Jordan Poyer are free agent signings. Mm-hmm. So as long as you can build kind of a cohesive unit on the back end that you can't pick on a guy, they're flexible, they're smart, and they play hard, you can get by with that sort of construction in that one specific area of a defense. That's what I've taken away from the Bengals and, in a way, from the Bills. Yeah. Barnwell, am I wrong about that? Because I know you're going to tell me that I am.
Well, look at the other teams that are playing in the Final Four, Mace. We have the Rams, who have a absolute bona fide superstar, and Jalen Ramsey, and their safety, one of their safeties is a guy who was playing pickup basketball 2 weeks ago. The Niners, I mean, have invested a lot of like mid-round picks in the draft, but no superstars there, no free agent signings, to my knowledge, that I can think of. And the Chiefs.
I mean, it's guys off the street. Like Josh Norman had to play snaps for them by necessity, but for the most part, it's homegrown guys.
Right. And the Chiefs, I mean, it's, you know, one superstar free agent signing in Tyrann Mathieu, one draft pick and one Thornhill. And then literally, if you are a cornerback who was taken in the first round, who disappoints for your team, the Chiefs are obligated by law to go after you. So I think I don't want to ruin your point, even though I think it's wrong. But what I'm going to say is that I feel like there is more than one way to skin a cat here. And I think what's worked for the Bills and worked for the Bengals is meaningful. It doesn't mean that everyone can pull that off. And I think it's going to be tougher to do that. But those teams have good coaches. Those teams are, and you know, they don't have that hole, I guess. Like, I think if you do that, but you still have a hole or two, that's a problem. But with the Bengals and with the Bills, I mean, their communication is really good. Their ability to pass stuff off is impressive. They're a very intelligent defense. They're very sound. They don't make a lot of mistakes. I feel like, you know, yes, you want to have Jalen Ramsey. Yes, you want to have guys who are going to create a ton of takeaways. But that's another way to do it, a viable way to do it.
And really, I've drawn this comparison from soccer, Bill, and is mm-hmm. it's been interesting to see that some of these defenses are built through the spine.
Yeah.
And that's what's really kind of maybe something to, like, I don't know, to look at, but like just something that's really come to the prominence. Safety play matters more than ever. I mean, we've, for a year on this show, have talked about how much safeties matter now, but that's going with the adjustable. You know,
the interchangeable safeties. Having interchangeable safeties matters more than ever.
And that's the spine.
As we go to this too high world, for sure.
And then now it's linebackers. Well, how the offense going to attack it? Well, they're going to attack the Mike linebacker. So that's the spine. Okay, mm-hmm. if we're going to be in too high, who has to win? Well, the defensive tackles have to hold their gaps. Mm-hmm. So it's all just being built through the interior, which I think is very interesting. That, not saying that corners don't matter or any of that sort, but how these positions are now swinging back to like, oh, wow, we actually need a nose tackle. oh, wow, mm-hmm. we actually need like safeties that can cover and do a lot of things. Maybe not this all world guy, but guys that are just balanced. I think balance is becoming just the name of the game for offenses and defenses.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I was talking to a GM a couple weeks ago, and we were talking just hypothetically about positional value and where you find certain guys, and we were talking about safety specifically. And even if we're trending toward an NFL and a football world where safeties are more valuable because of the way that they're playing, you can find them. There is a Von Bell in virtually every single free agent class. Like, you can get them this way, and that's not always true for positions that we're going to try to prioritize, which I think is interesting. And I think that's kind of the thing that I took away from the Bengals, from the Bills. That spot, you can find guys that maybe aren't necessarily super in demand, but can allow you to function defensively the way that you want to.
Yeah, but I mean, again, look at the Rams, where they're starting safeties right now are Nick Scott, who's a special teamer, who's been playing out of his mind for most of this playoffs. And then Weddle, a guy who, like I said, you know, obviously once upon a superstar playing pickup basketball a month ago, he had one of the plays of the conference championships, that run fit to, was this, who did they stop? Was it, wasn't the Juszczyk play? It was the play before that, right?
Yeah, it was the play before that. TFL on the play before that. Shanahan was talking about it specifically.
Yeah,
when he was asked about it.
He put out of his mind on Sunday, by the way.
Right.
It was insane. I couldn't believe how fast he was moving. I was like, what happened? Like, kind of that TB12 method.
Right. That's fresh, man.
He's fresh. Yeah, fresh legs.
Yeah. So I think there's just that feeling of like, you know, there's a bunch of ways to do this. And I think, you know, when you have that superstar cornerback, I think it does make the rest of your player's life easier. Or you have Aaron Donald, for example. Like, that stuff makes everyone's life easier.
Totally. Barnwell, what's your next one?
My next one is pretty much the opposite of what you guys were talking about. my next one is, let's get some freaks. Like, you need some freaks of skill positions to be playing at this level in the NFL at this point. I mean, think about the teams who are left and what they have at the skill positions. The Niners, I mean, they're the poster child, right? You have Debo, you have George Kittle. With the Bengals, you have Jamar Chase.
Even Ayuk is crazily talented.
Yes.
But like, on like, relative to Kittle and Debo, it's like almost, you know, like he's like the, oh, well, he's okay. But obviously he's incredible. He's
a Ringo Starr.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Like, he's going to have 8 number one hits, but everyone's going to be like, the Bengals, of course, have Chase and Higgins and Joe Mixon, who I think people sleep on, but who is a super athlete as well. And then the Chiefs.
Yep.
I don't need to tell you what the Chiefs have. Like, the Rams are strangely almost the exception, even though obviously Cooper Kupp is playing out of his mind, but like, you know, I feel like they have, we're seeing teams who are winning because they're absolutely physically dominant players are capable of winning.
My number one, that was first on my list, is that the presence of a matchup destroying pass catcher has never been more important, which is a corollary of this. There were 7 all-pro pass catchers this season. Okay. 5 wide receivers and 2 tight ends. 4 of them played last weekend. Travis Kelce, Debo Samuel, Cooper Kupp, and Jamar Chase. 5 of them played in the divisional round, if you include Devontae Adams. And Barnwell, we talk about this on our show all the time, and especially with the playoffs, and we use the Rams as an example. It's a matchup-based set of mini tournaments. Mm-hmm. All you need to do is, within an individual game, find a matchup that you can continue to win, and it's going to give you a great chance. And for the Rams last week, that was Cooper Kupp. Every single time the Niners were going to play man coverage on third down, Cooper Kupp was going to be able to win for them. In certain cases, Debo Samuel has been that sort of player where you just crush and destroy matchups for the Niners. Jamar Chase was that in the Chiefs game that kind of got the Bengals into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He was that in moments against the Titans in hugely important spots. So, I mean, I think that, you know, I'll have an offensive line point that I want to get to later, and obviously we had a long Chase Sewell discussion all offseason, but having one of these guys that
when it's a high leverage moment, when we need somebody who can just erase what the structure of the defense is supposed to be, that is almost a prerequisite to being a contender in the NFL right now for me.
Absolutely. Well, I can go into my next point because this is associated with freaks, and that's get a quarterback that can get you a freaking bucket. I'm not saying like this is a new point. This is more of an emphasis because
it is important to hammer it home though, because it's on my list as well. We need to keep doing it because it's been a fucking amnesia again, and it's going to be the spring. Like, oh, they can win with Ryan Tannehill. We're going to do it again, and we need to stop doing it.
I know, because when you watch these four quarterbacks go at it. And okay, Joe Burrow doesn't do everything through the air. It's Joe Burrow with his legs. Okay, that's getting a bucket. It's getting a bucket with your legs. We don't even have to talk about Josh Allen in the divisional round. But then even Mahomes, even before he kind of fell apart in the second half, the first half, he created two touchdowns. The touchdown to Mecole Hardman in the flat was Mahomes going rogue. He was going to throw, it was a shovel. And then he was like, I shouldn't say rogue, but adjusting to what the defense was giving him. Hardman's wide open in the flat. All right, I'm not throwing the shovel. I'm just going to plop it right over there. Red zone, like that's where they just create these plays. And then, of course, Stafford, Cup's beating man, and then Stafford has to throw those to man, beat the man coverage. The timing that he has, when defenses get tighter and tighter and tighter, like we've mentioned already three times on the show, is that everything is game planning in the playoffs. Everything gets tighter, tighter, tighter. They're on our shit. Every formation, they have a whole season of formation tells, a whole season of down and distance tells. Okay, well, if they know what we're running, how do I beat it still? How do they run the perfect coverage? They're quarters and they're driving on the backside dig. Well, do I have a quarterback that throws it on time and nails it? It doesn't even matter if they cover it tight. And then you see that, see the three quarterbacks I just mentioned, and then you see a Jimmy G of the world. And it's like, yes, when everything's perfect, I know that sounds mean, but when everything's perfect, yeah, it's great. Well, what if the run game gets shut down and now it's third and seven and he has to hit a corner throw against man? He has to hit a deep dig against man. Those types of coverages makes you dead. If you can't, the quarterback can't find a throw, or if he's wrong and he doesn't find the throw, can he create with his legs afterwards? Just creating those throws. That's really what the point of this is that you need that guy when everything's not perfect, doesn't freaking matter. He's just going to find you a play and keep moving the chains and keep it going. And I know it sounds obvious. Oh yeah, get an elite quarterback, but it matters. It matters. Find you a freak. Find you a freak at that position.
I have two follow-up questions. I have a serious one and a silly one. Which one do you want first?
Serious. Let's do the silly one first.
Oh, silly. okay, pick your poison.
I will go silly first. Where does Joe Burrow rank on the pickup basketball of NFL quarterback rankings? Where is he being drafted?
Oh, he'd be number one for me. I would pick him number one.
Number one over Josh Allen?
Joe Burrow can play basketball. Joe Burrow was a basketball player.
Oh, we're actually
player.
Like saying legit basketball?
You don't think every NFL quarterback can play basketball, like was like not a high school basketball player if they wanted to be?
That's very true.
Joe Burrow, I think it was Taylor Rooks tweeted this recently that he told her that he could score 12 points in an NBA game. I legitimately believe that Joe Burrow could maybe score 12 points in an NBA game. That man is just fueled by irrational confidence all the time. I want him on my pickup basketball team.
Yeah. It's pure. I you can't hate that guy because it's just like every take he has is like, this guy's great. This guy's awesome.
It's awesome.
That's so funny. It's like the flip side. So like Joe Mauer, he's like a Minnesota high school sports legend. Of course, he gets drafted by the Twins, number one overall. He was the Gatorade Player of the Year in football, Gatorade Player of the Year in baseball. And then they're like, oh, he played basketball too. And he's like, yeah, I wasn't that good at basketball. And you look up his stats. He was like two-time All-State, averaged like 24 points a game, like eight rebounds a game. And it's like, maybe I like the Joe Burrow side where I'm scoring 20 a night in the NBA as opposed to Joe Mauer going like, it's my third. It's a hobby. Like my third best sport. Probably going to play low level D1 in basketball as well. But yeah, all these guys are pretty much freaks. Have you ever seen Philip Rivers play basketball?
Oh my God.
It's actually like he's insane. He's like actually like good.
That makes total sense to me. That is not surprising to me. So Barnwell, what's your serious question?
Yeah.
I cheated and I looked a couple things up. Patrick Mahomes averaged 19-8 as a high school basketball player, but the NFL quarterback who was recruited to play college basketball by programs such as Georgetown and Gonzaga, after starring at Westlake High School in Austin, Texas. Do either of you guys know?
At Westlake? Is that
Drew Brees?
Not Drew Brees.
Who else was it? Stafford? Was Stafford Westlake?
No, Stafford went to Highland Park. Nick Foles?
Nick Foles.
Yeah. Foles. I could see he's like 6'5". So yeah. is he at that 6'6" threshold, Robert? Like that's where the cutoff hits. Like, oh, good at basketball now.
He's 6'6". He is 6'6".
He fits the too tall quarterback theory that has now been smashed to pieces by Justin Herbert. So
right. Okay. My serious question is, knowing what you just said and agreeing with what you just said, Nate, when it comes to sort of not having those or not just settling for a mid-tier quarterback, like how do you actually what do you do about that if you're an NFL GM? Like, do you just not settle for those guys? Are you actively trying to trade away one of those guys? Like, you know, I mean, we've seen lesser quarterbacks win the Super Bowl. We saw Nick Foles win a Super Bowl. We saw Joe Flacco. Yeah. We saw Eli Manning win 2 Super Bowls. And yes, like Eli Manning was very good. I don't want to turn this into an Eli podcast, but you get the idea. Like those guys were not like, oh my God, they are guaranteed week after week MVP candidates. So how do you handle that if you're a GM? Like, how aggressive are you willing to get to try and get one of those guys?
I think with that, the quarterback position, and again, one of those types of guys, this is such a good question though. It just makes everything else easier. It just raises that bar. Just we talk about mm-hmm. paths a lot on the show, mm-hmm. kind of like, hey, they give themselves 5 options now to go down. The Rams are on the other side. It's like, hey, they're all in. This is their window. They're pushing it. Mm-hmm. It's when you have an elite guy, not everybody else has to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And those guys, like you say, the Nick Foles of the world, okay, that was a hot run of all hot runs. And it also led by a schematic advantage when they were kind of emphasizing the RPOs and they were just going for broke every game. Mm-hmm. The Elis of the world was relying on the NASCAR defensive line, you know, but Spags, actually kind of funny that comes.
I also think that 10 years ago we lived in a different version of the NFL.
Different version.
Win that way.
But even mm-hmm. even then though, but you could take kind of the historical examples of all that. It's like, oh yeah, you need to rely on so many other things. When Jimmy G almost won a couple of years ago, it's because the same thing, their defensive line was literally unblockable. Mm-hmm. Like it was pressure every single snap. But that's requiring hitting on 3 or 4 different guys. And I get it. I'm kind of talking out both sides of my mouth. You want to have competence at the position so you can at mm-hmm. least like, hey, we're contender. We can make the playoffs and get that bonus. But I think it leads to more room for error if mm-hmm. you just have that guy. And also, you could just pray that your former assistant GM gets a GM job for the Detroit Lions. So that trade avenue opens up a little bit more. I think that also helps as well.
The way that I would answer this question, because one of mine was you need one of the guys. And I've come back to it the entire season. I said mm-hmm. it in week 4 when I was watching Baker Mayfield and I was watching Justin Herbert, and you saw the gap between those two guys. And I think it's exactly the reason that you're saying, Nate, is that you just need somebody that can make you right. The playoffs especially, mm-hmm. when we have these hyper-specific game plans meant to take away one aspect of who you are, you need to be able to do something else. You need a problem solver at the position, not a cog within the machine. But there are only so many of those guys. So I think the two things I would say about the process of finding one is, when there is an opportunity to go get one, you have to do it. Mm-hmm. You have to take that door when it is presented to you. The Chiefs could have stuck with Alex Smith if they wanted to. Could have kept going down mm-hmm. that road. They took the door when Patrick Mahomes was there. The Rams could not have made the Stafford trade. They could have said, oh, 2 first-round picks, geez, that's a little too rich for our blood. But they did it. They opened the door when it was available to them. And the connecting point of that is you can't commit to the middling quarterback. You can have one if you need it for a year. If you need to draft one, if you draft one and he doesn't become that guy, mm-hmm. ride it out. I don't think the Browns have to go get a new quarterback this year. Baker Mayfield's making $18 million. Mm-hmm. That's totally reasonable for what Baker Mayfield is in the grand scheme of quarterback finances. But I don't think you can commit to that guy the way the Rams committed to Jared Goff. I think that is where the problem arises. So when you have a chance to go get one, do everything you can to maximize that chance and don't prevent yourself from going to get one because you've saddled yourself to one of those middling, I need everything to be right quarterbacks. That would be my answer.
That's the issue, though, I wonder about is, are teams good enough to figure out which is which? Like the Rams, yes, they'll sit here now and say, hey, you know, Matthew Stafford was a major upgrade and they paid like Matthew Stafford was a major upgrade. And I do think Matthew Stafford is better than Jared Goff. But like, if you talk to that franchise after year 3, when they signed Jared Goff to that extension, like they were obstinate about it. Like, oh, of course, Jared Goff is one of those guys. You're an idiot if you think otherwise. And to be fair, that was the year Jared Goff had that 5 touchdown game against the Vikings. He had
I
that
was there.
the 54-51 game against the Chiefs. Like he had games where he looked like he was that dude, and he was still young enough to be growing and developing. So I think, and the Niners, of course, I mean, they trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. He goes like 6-0 at the end of that season, or 5-0 at the end of that season. He was good with the Patriots. And like, yes, like, you know, what happened happened. I don't want to criticize them for making these moves, but I just want to ask, like, how outside of like the just total, you know, one of one types, the Mahomes is the Allens, where you have no doubt about signing them. Like that middle ground of guys, not the Cousins necessarily, but someone like a Goff, given the situation Goff was in, or Wentz when Wentz signed his contract. Like, how easy is it for teams to get sort of distracted or deluded by the idea that they have one of these guys?
I think it's easy. And I also think it's a matter of when you go to get one, right? I think it's so much easier. And I understand this is hard. I really do understand that this is difficult. It's much, much easier to follow this kind of mini plan that I've laid out when you draft a guy and you have 4 years to decide whether or not you want to extend him. In the case of the Garoppolo and Tannehill situations, you don't have that time. You have 1 year after you've acquired that quarterback to decide whether you want to keep him. And based on the success both of those teams had in that short run before that decision, it made sense for them to tie themselves to that quarterback. This is hard, right? Yeah. It's hard for a bunch of different reasons, because I think I had this discussion with Mitch the other day. This is talking about it in kind of ideal experimental conditions where it's in a vacuum. We don't do this in a vacuum. These GMs have to keep their jobs. You know, if you have a top five-ish offense and you're winning 10 games a year, tying yourself to that quarterback so you don't lose your job makes a lot of sense. But if you're trying to compete with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen every single year, even if you can win 10 games a couple times, ultimately you're going to realize that you're playing a different game and one you're probably going to lose.
Yeah, it's self-awareness is a hell of a trait. That's really what it is. It's so crazy because you can – well, I've been on teams where you're in this and you're like, well, this is our guy. There's nothing that teams want more than their guy,
of course.
It be the Jimmy G's of the world or any of that. And you get pot committed. It sounds like that's what it comes down to. It's either all in or stopgap. You know, you max it or stopgap. You're taking a semi bluff, hoping that the flush hits, you know, something of that sort. That's what it kind of feels like. But that requires self-awareness. And some of these teams, you can talk yourselves into it. Now, I'm just kind of agreeing with Robert saying right here is that it's hard. It's hard. It's you have to have awareness outside of your bunker and as an organization going like, is our guy 16th best? Is our guy 18th best? Is he 8th best? And that, because that's a world of difference. That's two first round, basically a first rounder per tier. Is basically what the trade-off is, going from like Goff to Stafford. Like, that's basically what you're trading up. But it's also interesting what the 49ers do, because they have the same kind of feeling on it, is they traded all those picks to move up to Trey Lance. And that's like a funny little experiment in itself that's going on there.
Right. That is, to me, the biggest example and the biggest argument for why this is necessary, is that in order to win a Super Bowl, in order to be a consistently relevant team with one of these middle-tier quarterbacks, you need an offensive system and an offensive play caller that is going to consistently make the circumstances perfect or near perfect, that is going to consistently provide those edges for you. Two of the guys who are maybe two of the best five guys in the world doing that, let's throw Andy Reid in there as three, were those guys looked around and said, I need one of the alien guys. Yeah. All of them came to that conclusion independently of one another, and they were best set up to create those ideal circumstances for a guy who can't create it for himself. And I just think that's so incredibly telling that moment of self-awareness came for those three guys. So if it's not coming for you, you fucked up.
And I think the end last year was, it's funny looking back at the Rams season last year, and when, you know, the John Wolford experiment, and it was like, McVay had to get his teeth pulled.
That's what we should have known. We should have known.
Put Goff back on the field. That was they're fighting on the sidelines, you know, in their own passive aggressive way. But that was so interesting, and looking back through the lens of a year later and seeing what the path that happened with that team. Because it was a month later, it's 3-4 weeks later that it's like Stafford trade, as I'm playing a board game with my wife and you're texting me. We got to do an emergency pod on the Stafford trade. But it's just funny seeing like those guys have those epiphanies and they're like, okay, what's our avenues? What's the avenues we can to upgrade to go a tier or two tiers better?
And I think it's just important to keep the avenues open. If you're the Browns, you can keep Baker Mayfield for right now. You take every phone call.
You field every phone call, you make every phone call, and you see what else is out there. Well, Barlow, what's your next one, buddy?
Well, I have one more question about this related to the one quarterback I think is plausibly going to be available who fits the better than Matthew Stafford, obviously, criteria this offseason, and that's Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, like, given what happened here over these past few weeks, given how many of the teams who have been remaining are just left with absolute aliens at quarterback, and having one alien available this offseason to work with, like, what is the cutoff line for you guys? Like, for a guy who's in his late 30s, who's going to need a new contract, like, is it 3 first-round picks? Is it
That's the number that was in my mind. That's the number. I had 3.
You're not willing to give up 3, or you're willing to give up 3?
I'd be willing to give up 3 if I was the right team in the right circumstances. Like, if I'm Cleveland and they said, all right, it's 3 first-round picks, I do it tomorrow.
Dude,
I'm
driving Baker Mayfield to the airport and saying, we don't have a trade for you, Baker. Just go somewhere else and we'll figure out something along the way. Like, you have to.
A holding pen?
Like, yeah.
He's a player to be named later, like a baseball trade. Like that's what it happens to.
He's future generations.
The Rams traded 2 first round picks for Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
They haven't looked back one time since it happened.
I don't know if that's true.
Nah, I don't think they
have. But right now they're not, for sure. And that's what matters, right?
Yeah.
There are some moments with his decision-making that I think really make you worry. But what their offense has looked like, and just they're number one in EPA over the course of the year. They have the best passing offense, the most efficient passing offense in football. I mean, I think it's hard to overstate the value of these guys. It's just hard. It's really hard to figure out what the value really is. 3 first-round picks, $50 million a year. It's worth it. It is typically worth it. And that's why the Derek Carr of it all is interesting to me. It's like,
waiting for you to bring up his name
because he's not in that tier, but he's also like one tier above some of the other guys.
Yeah.
It's just, again, that's why this shit is very, very hard. All right, we can talk about this for 6 hours. Barnwell, what's your next one?
Oh, I don't have another one? I must. Let me see. I have one. This is kind of a classic. I'm going to play the hits here. Don't bother paying running backs, guys. Like, look at these teams. The Rams have Cam Akers, who's been kind of middling since coming back from his torn Achilles. They got by just fine with Sony Michel and Daryl Henderson. The Niners, I mean, paid a bunch of guys. Their best running back is Debo Samuel. Their second best running back is a 6th-round pick. Trey Sermon, who they traded up for, like, might literally be in a doghouse somewhere because Kyle Shanahan never wants to play him. The guy who Kyle Shanahan paid so much money to acquire, Jerick McKinnon, was the best running back for the Chiefs during the postseason. Clyde Edwards.
For nothing.
Yeah.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire, their first-round pick, is like good in a situational role, but like, it's not remotely comparable to the player they had a year ago. And yes, granted, Joe Mixon is the exception. And I think Joe Mixon is a really good running back. But like, of the other teams here, like, how is the lesson not this position? It matters, but there's so many ways to get to useful players that it's not worth paying a premium for the particular player to have as the every down back or something close to the every down back on your roster.
I think running backs, the top end, you don't want to pay him. I mean, look what's happened to CMC and those types of guys. Hey. I love CMC, but it's a deeper well.
Yeah.
I think these teams realize I want to say replacement player, but just more of finding a useful player. If the teams kind of know what they're looking for, the McKinnon's a good one because he has juice and you could find use for a player like that. But there's so many of these guys that just get the Seahawks signing Adrian Peterson off the street. But there's so many useful running backs out there that, you're not going to have this bell cow. You don't need to find a bell cow anymore. You just need to find a guy that can get you that 10 to 12 touches and get creative and find the uses for him. All these guys are better pass catchers than they were even 10 years ago. It's really this type that's kind of come in. It's either the Jonathan Taylor, Nick Chubbs of the world, or it's the Kamaras of the world. Kamara's an upper echelon one, but those 200-pound scat back types that we used to call scat backs are more 3-down types. And I think there's just such a deeper well because of what comes out of college now. All these guys have to catch. Like they have to just because of the offenses. They're five out offenses. They're inept. They're spread. They're running, and just the traits that go with them. So I'm kind of agreeing with you. That's a deeper well. The parameters higher, but these teams have to be more willing to mine for it. I think that's a better way to put it. Just like to talk about corners and the retreads that the Chiefs do with the quarterbacks. There's more running backs out there to be found. And I think that's I'm just kind of agreeing with your point, but just having dovetailing it with a little bit, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine. I mean, I can tell you that is it possible that the best running backs of the NFL postseason were Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and Deebo Samuel, three guys who are not running backs in terms of their running value to their teams over the three-game window or the four-game window?
Versatility is king now. That's what it is. All these guys have to be – every quarterback has to be dual threat, even if we don't consider them dual threat how we used to, but be able to use your legs, and running backs have to be able to catch, and receivers should be able to run. that's what it's becoming. And on defense, it's the same thing. Same thing. Linebackers have to be able to cover – play the rod, blitz, because they're using them in every which way. Safeties and linebackers are getting the same body type. It's really speaks to versatility as well. But I know that's not exactly what you're saying, but it's it's interesting that all these guys have to be able to just be complete football players now, as opposed to this guy's 230 pounds, give him the ball 20 times, and have a fullback in front of him. It's all about being versatile now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also think that if we're going back to the draft, just the uber athlete guys, it seems true for running backs too. Like, if you're going to spend a second-ish round pick, which if you think about the borderline success stories for high running back investments recently, they're all second-round picks. Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, Jonathan Taylor, all of them were second-round picks. And all of them, those guys, have otherworldly physical profiles. Jonathan Taylor and Nick Chubb are literally off the charts in terms of their athletic traits. And those kind of guys are worth betting on in that range. But drafting a guy who has kind of a weird, unique, specific skill set, like Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round, just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Go for the freaks, right, Bill? Go. Draft the freaks. It's big athletes. That's where you go for all these positions. But yeah, I agree, Robert. It's second round. You find these guys. And actually, in this upcoming class, there's a lot of second and third rounders. You don't have to waste a pick in the 20s on this. You just don't. Najee Harris is not worth it. It's not worth juice to squeeze, especially with that pick where you can find other positions.
Right. And Najee Harris is good. Like, it's not criticizing Najee Harris. It's just acknowledging that there's so many interesting players out there. And it's not about, let's not pay these guys, but more just there were so many guys who deserve NFL salaries.
It's like a bunch of 3D guys.
Yeah.
So exactly. Barnwell's shutting up and playing the hits, so I will too. Let's talk about some offensive lines.
Okay.
I think this is kind of an extension of the conversation we were having about the Bengals secondary, that those spots, going and finding proven veterans, is a way to do this and a way to be successful. When you're building an offensive line, consider the veteran pool. Like, make sure that don't be scared off by the trade market. Don't be scared off by the free agent market, because you can build an offensive line that way. There are some positions where it's going to be difficult to do that. The offensive line doesn't seem to be one of them. Look at the Niners offensive line. Trent Williams, trade. Lakin Tomlinson, trade. Alex Mack, signed in free agency. The Rams offensive line. Andrew Whitworth was the centerpiece of their first free agent class. Austin Corbett is somebody they got on the veteran market. The Chiefs, they trade for Orlando Brown. They sign Joe Tooney in free agency. So every single one of these teams has some guys that a team intentionally went out and got, either through a free agent signing or through some sort of trade. Mm-hmm. You can get guys through those means as a means of rebuilding your offensive line. And I think that's worth keeping into consideration when you're, I don't know, a team like the Chicago Bears, who theoretically could be rebuilding its offensive line this year and is going to need to be thinking about some of this stuff.
Offensive lines to raise the floor, quarterbacks raise the ceiling.
Yes, that's a really good way to put it.
Thank you. Once in a while, I have those gems. I can't say a lot of words. Robert has to correct me a lot, or I have to look at him and go, how do I say that? So once in a while, I black out and have a moment.
That's not true. You had a really good point on your Twitch stream about how there's three things an offense has to do on a given play, and there's three goals versus, baseball or hockey or basketball, where there's one goal. And I think there's truth to that as well.
that came out clean. I'm glad. Yeah, that was a. I'm very interested because I want to. I that's the thing. I love the movement of this analytics and figuring out what is useful and figuring out what we can find from it. That's why there's something with running the ball, and there's gonna be a stat we'll figure out. Mm-hmm. And I compared that to pitch framing before, where it's like we didn't know how important that was. Same thing with football and basketball. You're trying to score either a 2-pointer or a 3-pointer, and the defense is trying to stop you from scoring in 24 seconds or less. In baseball, it's, hey, get a hit or get on base. And the defense is, it's a pitcher. It's a one-on-one matchup. That's the goal. It's get a hit. Hopefully it's a home run. In football, there's so many goals you can have. Yes, every offensive play is designed to score a touchdown, but then there's, auxiliary goals, getting a first down or getting an efficient play. And so that's what someone asked a question. They said, why are third down defenses so much different? And that's where that rant or whatever you want to say, galaxy brain take came from, was because that's what it is. On third down, the goal is get a first down. Yeah, we want to score, but get a first down. That's really the primary goal that changes. So it's just it's just interesting in finding why some plays are better than others, and also just how every down and distance changes what the goal of the play is. Yeah, but thank you.
Now, to address Mace's point, Mace, how do you explain the Bengals being here with their offensive line?
It's impossible.
How?
I mean, I truly am not even thinking about it as a data point, because it doesn't make any sense. It would be a terror. Anyone who is taking away from the Bengals being here, you know what? We don't need to worry about that, really. That is wrong. That is not the correct takeaway from the Bengals playing in
so
this
defensive.
Game. You cannot do this. They are hanging by a thread. Dude. I mean, there is one or two plays that go a different way. Chris Jones finishes off that sack. We may not even be talking about the Bengals this week. So
sure.
they have gotten here because Jamar Chase and the skill position talent that they've acquired is incredible. Because Joe Burrow's true superpower physically as a quarterback is being evasive in the pocket. His actual strengths happen to align with where the Bengals are weakest and has allowed them to transcend that shortcoming at this stage of the season. And guess what? Their defense has gotten them here. Mm-hmm. Their offense has not lit the world on fire in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They've scored in under 20 points and won a playoff game. Mm-hmm. Their defense is the reason that they are here, combined with some scattered plays and some scattered brilliance from Joe Burrow. So I am taking away nothing from the Bengals offensive line as part of this conversation.
Okay, just ignore the data points that don't fit your theory. You're perfect for the analytics movement, Mace. You're welcome here now. Let me ask you another question. How much did it hurt you to see the Niners unable to block fullback lead or fullback belly with the game on the line and Trent Williams going in motion? How much did it hurt you to see the wizard of run plays and the most dynamic offensive lineman in the league not do enough to block with the game on the line?
It's not Wizards of the Coast. It's Wizards of the West Coast. Yes.
Well, I think that has a lot to do with the other players on the 49ers offensive line.
Who of course.
Did not shower themselves in glory last week against that front for the Rams.
For sure. No, I mean, I think it's just, I absolutely agree. But again, I think there's that question to me of, is it better to go out and say, okay, listen, screw it, we're going to invest just a ton of money and a ton of draft picks on our offensive line? Or is it better to say, okay, we're just going to get Bill Callahan and we're going to have talent for sure, but he's going to get the most out of guys who might be, he's going to take average players and make them good, or good players and make them great. Like, I think the bonus factor of having that great offensive line coach is so valuable that, you might want to target that coach more than you target a couple of players.
That's a hugely important part of this. I don't think you need to spend a ton on your offensive line. I don't think you need the most expensive free agents or a guy you have to trade a first round pick to go get. Mm-hmm. I think you can find guys who are not necessarily that expensive, who are available, guys who are available, and guys that typically the guys that hit the market, we're talking about that 78 to 82 on Madden that Nate was referring to. Mm-hmm. If you build your offensive line out of five of those guys, I think that you can do just fine. I don't think you need a superstar or a couple on your offensive line. I think you need I think you need to embrace the idea that you can rebuild your offensive line faster than you think, because there are more functional pieces available through the veteran pool than it might seem like there are at first glance. I think that's my takeaway.
You know how Tom Brady just got inducted into the 99 club in Madden? Yeah. I feel like Nate needs to start inducting people into the 78 to 82 club.
Or if they graduate from it, like, he's
in the 83 club now.
He's the 83 club. Yeah, that might have to be it right now. This is such a great point about even going from the first point about how much line coaches matter is, like you said, Bill, taking an average player, making them above average, just bumping them up a tier, and just that kind of multiplier effect that a good old line coach can have and a good center can have. That's the other thing. Good centers can really make everything else look a lot better.
For sure.
But Justice Mosqueda, he had always had a great point about when you sign an offensive lineman or draft an offensive lineman, what are they as far as your starters? Is he your O-line 3?
Yeah.
Or is he your O-line 5? Is your O-line 1? Mm-hmm. And I always like that because it's not having, it helps to have all pros and Pro Bowlers littered throughout your line, but it's really, where's the weakness? Or do we have one guy that's a 68, like number 60 for the 49ers at right guard? Or do we have a whole bunch of guys at 81, 85, and we have one guy that's kind of Pro Bowl-ish? And I think that's what a good O-line coach does too, is that you also get a bump from these middle round picks. Hey, he might be a better identifier of talent than other O-line coaches are, or D-line coaches. Hey, he finds some guy in the third or fourth round. Some guys don't like him as a scheme fit, or he sees something that works for them, grows them. And then that third rounder is a starter for you. A fourth rounder is a starter for you. And then it's just kind of like a doubling down effect of, hey, now we don't have to invest as much. We don't have to take first rounders every single year. We don't have to. So it's just, yes, you have to invest in the line, but you don't have to invest as much as long as you have a coach that makes sense for it.
Yep.
Nate, do you have one more?
I have one more. It's kind of funny. One of my points, just in case we wanted to change it up, was how far can your skill guys take the offense? We already touched on that with the Bengals. But the other one is, and we're talking about new quarterbacks with Stafford going to the Rams, and I mean, just all the other ones that are about to happen, I think. But also, in a league kind of more open to player trades, to player movement, I think this is kind of not a new trend, but it's kind of picking up every year, led by the Rams, of course, is the acclimation period of getting these guys in a midseason trade or a midseason signing. I think that's going to be a very interesting development. We have an extra game now. That's an extra game to kind of go, hey, we don't need to play these guys. We have bigger practice squads. We have bigger just kind of roster movement. And that's led some from COVID, but I think also that's going to stick because I think teams like it. Like, we get to develop 15 guys as opposed to 6, and we could churn the bottom of the roster. Why I'm saying all that is, when you acquire these stars, the Rasheed Wallaces in the midseason trade for the Pistons, you know, those types of things that we see in baseball and somewhat in basketball, now we see it more in football. And it's not going to be all the time, but I think there's going to be more openness to it. And I'm using the Rams as my example here to kind of lead this conversation. But we have younger coaches coming in, personnel guys there, their roles are expanding. We understand these types of things. There's more of a willingness to do these things, to make changes in midseason, to add new talent. Because before it's like, well, they weren't here in training camp, they understand our scheme. I think now, as things become more cookie cutter throughout the league, I shouldn't say cookie cutter, but it's a copycat league.
Sure.
But really, it's hybrid. It's insane how these offenses have become just hybrid versions of each other. Just, you have a little emphasis on other things. But the Von Millers and the OBJs, like with the Rams brought in, trade and signing, took about 3 to 4 weeks for them to figure out how to get them in. Melvin Ingram, another great example. Those types of guys, I think there's going to be just more willingness to do that. Some teams bottoming out, even if they're not getting paid $100,000 for every loss, they're just not really looking at that, but they might just go, hey, this star is a little pissed off and he wants to get paid. Let's see if we can get a third for him. Let's see if we can get a second for him. And there's, I think, these contender teams that understand, hey, this is our window. We're 6-2 right now and it feels pretty good. We can make this work. I think there's just going to be more willingness to make these types of trades, these midseason types of trades for teams that are truly contending. And I think that's just going to be a market. I'm really interested. I think players are more vocal. They are more worldly. Just every year, players and just people in general become more worldly, more aware of what their situations are. So I think that's more of, you know, they don't really protect the team on the helmet. It's more like, where am I winning and where am I getting paid? And I think there's just going to be more willingness. Coaches going, I understand. Hey, yeah, we'll get you to a better setup. And then that coach being willing to adapt to it. So it's more just, I don't know if it's a takeaway, an observation, a prediction, But I'm just very curious if there's more and more teams that are willing to do it. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. I think that's all we got. Barnwell, I really appreciate you coming to do this. It's always great to chat with you. I'm so glad that we got to do it with Nate on the show.
So when are we talking about the men's national team now?
So what'd you think? How'd you like?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Luca De La Torre looked pretty good.
Yeah.
You guys can go record that on your own.
I got an FTR shirt on for you.
There we go.
Shirt on. Yeah. I knew it was a special occasion.
All right, guys. Thank you very, very much. Everyone, thank you very, very much for listening. Sincerely appreciate the time. Please rate and review the podcast on your podcast platform of choice. Very much appreciate that. Please subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/football show. We have so much Super Bowl coverage coming your way here over the next week or so. We'll be back on Monday with obviously a slightly different Monday show because there are no games, but that's going to be exciting with a little bit of a surprise there. So please come back and check that out. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll talk to you later.
This was The Athletic Football Show.